Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Live from Aspen Public Radio, I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, a snow boots on the ground perspective from Pyeongchang and some Olympic highlights as the games come to a close. Also, locals will be getting a new restaurant this spring. Will it be affordable? How our governments are responding to safety concerns and gun laws, and where to find hope and help during a mental health crisis. All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me today to put all of this in context and give their insights are Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, David Krause, editor of the Aspen Times, and Cindy Hirschfield, editor-in-chief of Aspen Sojourner Magazine. Thank you all for joining me. Madeline Osberger's on-the-scene reporting of the 2018 Winter Olympics can be found in the Aspen Daily News all week in print and online. She's getting ready to head home today, but not before we catch up with her here on Valley Roundup. Hi, Madeline.
Hi, Allison. Great to talk to you. I'm so excited, and I'm having such a wonderful time here at the Olympics. It's just indescribable.
It's so cool. So tell me where you are right now.
Right now, I am, I can overlook Phoenix Snow Park. My hotel, ironically, is called The White View, and it snowed last night for the first time. I've been here 11 days, and it's been pretty dry and cold, so it's great to see the snow. You can almost hear the music. I mean, if I put my phone out the window, you could, of Phoenix. I'm just a few hundred yards, which is great. It's really convenient for these events like the half-pipe skiing and all the freestyle events, except for Big Ear. That's over at a different park, and I won't get to see that, unfortunately.
So where are you during the events? Where are you? Is the media pool stationed?
Well, it's all over. It's really, I guess if we look west to east, I'm in the most westernmost part of all the venues, which are spread out. I think it's about 50 miles. So I'm in this pod, like I said, where the freestyle events are. And then there's kind of this main, they call it the mountain cluster. That's where the main press center is. And from there, the cross country and the biathlon, ski jump, those are clustered there. And then there's an area called Yongsan, where the downhills have taken place. And then there's another ski area, which I can't pronounce, and I have not been there, where the technical events like giant slalom have been. Mike Maple, who was here watching Wiley, he went up to the technical mountain the other day, and he said it was incredibly steep. He watched Michaela in the slalom. She finished fourth, but I think it was a really good race.
So you've covered ski competitions for a long time and big name ones here in Aspen, World Cup, X Games, major events. Does the Olympics feel different?
The Olympics are definitely different. I mean, the security is huge. The scope is really cool. But I have to say, the freestyle events and the free skiing, they're pretty chill, as is the sport, which is very welcome. And those have the largest crowds, too. I think that there's a connection that people here really like that, whereas the alpine events, it's been pitiful for both the downhills. I mean, 2,000 people? Come on, we've had more people like that for Aspen, especially for the World Cup final.
It's such an opportunity to be at the Olympics. I'm wondering what lasting memories you'll be taking away, both as a journalist and just you personally, when you look back at the 2018 Olympic Games?
Well, clearly the highlight and what I kind of planned this whole very last-minute trip around was the men's free ski final from the halfpipe with Torin and Alex. I mean, as we all know now, Alex has been skiing superb all week, flawless. And I don't think he got, because David Wise pulled out this miraculous run in the third run yesterday, he missed the first two, and you know, he pulled out a big win, but, I mean, Alex's skiing can't be understated, how he's never skied this well, and it's his attitude. He was less than a point out of the gold, and I think that really needs to be reiterated how great he was. You know, and then Torin, what a heartbreak. Torin's been skiing well, too. He put it out there, and, you know, when he goes high, he really goes high. For Torin, I feel like it's all or nothing, and unfortunately, this won't be an Olympics he's going to want to remember too much. That was certainly a heartbreak.
So it seems.
I'd also, I guess, another huge memory is, Alice McKenna's coming down. She, in the downhill, she first came down in fourth place. She got bumped to fifth, but she had a gold medal smile on. And I asked her afterwards, I'm like, well, did that feel like a gold medal? She's like, well, I think a gold medal would feel better, but it sure felt great. And she was teary-eyed. There was so much emotion at the women's downhill. Lindsey Vonn kind of set the tone because she was sort of an emotional wreck all day. I've never seen her really unglued all day like that in all the TV interviews and then in the press conference. And the emotions ran very, very high at the women's downhill.
That story about Alice just brought tears to my eyes. She's a local girl and competing on the highest level. I mean, that's just chills for me.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. And then I was over watching Finney Hamilton race the other day, and then I happened to see the women, get the first gold medal ever in cross-country skiing, men or women, and that was very, very thrilling. Didn't have the local connection, but, Finney was up next. And that's another thing that kind of got lost. Finney skied fantastic in the quarterfinal, or whatever they call their qualifications. He overtook this guy, cruising up the hill. It was great strategy. But then in the final, and then he and his partner qualified top in their round. But in the finals, his partner fell. The guy didn't give up, but, clearly they weren't going to be in the medals. They ended up sixth.
Oh, wow.
I know Finney's such a gentleman, and he congratulated his partner, but certainly there had to be a lot of sadness with that.
So those are the kind of things you're experiencing that we don't see just from the television over here, that there's all these moments and triumphs and little strategies that go beyond first, second, third place.
Right. Well, I haven't seen any of the TV coverage. All we get is the Korean coverage, and that's mostly speed skating. Short track is so exciting. I saw it in Salt Lake. I wasn't able to see it here because it's a really long hoof to get out to Danyang that one day. And I spent the day there, but I wasn't able to get into that event. It's hard. I don't know what NBC's doing. I keep hearing criticism. I don't know if Wiley's run made it on the television. I would hope so because he skied well, but it was a wind-driven day, and nobody after he started after 10th had a chance that day.
Wow.
The weather's been a big factor here, and it's been all cold. It's surprising. Even Peter Olenek, who has been back and forth here for 3 years now because he's been coaching the Korean 3 years, he said this is as cold as he's seen it.
Oh, no. Being part of the Olympic Village and being at the Olympics? I mean, I know how I think that looks from movies or in my imagination. What is it actually like?
Well, the Olympic Village, it's much more spread out than at other Olympics. There isn't that core is down in Danyang, and then there's an Olympic Village near Alpensia. But where the flame is, it's really strange. They built this stadium just for the opening and closing ceremony, and that's where the flame burns. And it's a shame because the only time I saw it was when I was on the bus coming back one night.
Wow.
I could see it in the distance. It's not somewhere that people go and gather, which has been, I'd say that's the only thing I would fault in this Olympics. Maybe they should have put it in a more central location. But you get over, like here at Phoenix now, I'm starting to see the people amassed. They're having some skier cross today, which is such a cool event, and that's Nakaji. You'll be doing the music for that, too.
Oh, neat.
And all these local people. I've had people come up to me, hey, I'm like, oh, gosh, who's that? Oh, wow, out of context. That's miles away or whatever it is. Really cool. It seems big, and in other ways, it seems small.
Madeline Osberger is a contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. She's on the line from PyeongChang. Madeline, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me across the world.
Oh, it's great. I'm honored to do it, Allison, and we'll see you soon back in Aspen.
You are listening to Valley Roundup live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me here in the studio to put the week's news in perspective for us today are David Krause. Hi, David.
How are you? Good afternoon.
Good. Thanks so much for being here. He's the editor of the Aspen Times. And Cindy Hirschfeld, editor-in-chief of Aspen Sojourner Magazine. Cindy, thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course, it is our winter pledge drive, as you know. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We know this is the most popular local show that we have. That means it's time to call 920-9000 to support shows like Valley Roundup, where we get the greatest minds in the Valley together to give us the behind the scenes of our local week in news. Call now, 920-9000. David, I have to start with a happy anniversary to you. You wrote about your 1 year this week.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It's been a great first year. Like a lot of people probably know, I've been coming up here for almost 25 years, so it was a great transition for me and for the family.
From the Denver Post, right? Most recently before Aspen Times?
Yeah, about 17 years at the Post, yes.
What I found fascinating was the comments on the article of like the assessment on, yeah, he's been here a year. I think that's an Aspen local.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying. I like it on the gondola. I like to tell people, you know, if they ask where you live, it's a point of pride, that's for sure.
That's right. And there was a column actually this week about that as well. When do you have to out local the like frequent visitors, which was kind of entertaining.
Yeah. Right. That was in our new advice column in Aspen Sojourner by Meredith Carroll.
Exactly. I hate to start out with such a downer topic coming out of the Olympics there, but especially because you are both parents and have kids in our local schools, of course, it's what's being talked about most nationally right now is gun laws and regulations, especially as it comes to how are we going to handle safety in schools. As a parent and a journalist, as you watch events like this unfold, and of course this isn't the first time, I kind of want both of your reactions. Maybe Cindy, I'll start with you, because David and I'd love to go to some of the reporting that your team has done on that. But Cindy, when that day happens and as the conversation happens, how do you react?
Obviously, as a parent, it hits close to home. I'd say, I mean, in terms of this event happening recently, still the Newtown shooting, the Sandy Hook one, hit closest to home because my son was exactly that age at the time. And I remember that day I was working at home and I just couldn't get anything done. And my husband walked in the door and he had tears in his eyes and said, you know, they were kindergartners. You know, there's something still about that exceptional vulnerability that just really, really got me. This one, you know, it was more of a, here we go again. It's, right. You know, however many years later and we're still in the same place.
Do you guys see these incidents as a journalist too? Do you think about, well, how do we cover it from here locally, or how would I have covered that had that been our community?
Yeah, you know, I've been involved in a couple of those in the Denver area. I remember Columbine, and we were coming back actually on the highway from Grand Junction. It was right after Easter weekend, and that's the one our son was a year old. And so that's, you know, that age thing, it's just like, what is going on? And to still have this conversation, I think it gets frustrating, and it's good to see the young people engaging more and really trying to say this, you know, when is enough going to be enough?
And that absolutely seems like that's what's unique about this incident this week is the students who survived, the survivors coming and being part of that conversation. David, your team is working on a story about our own local security at the Aspen schools. What is the system there?
Yeah, and so yesterday afternoon, the sheriff and the police chief met with Superintendent Malloy and some of the staff over at the school district for about an hour and a half and just kind of looked at what they have now and what they might want to do in the future. I think you're going to probably see more of a presence is one thing for sure that they talked about, even starting immediately. I know the sheriff's always got a car out there by the high school when I go there, okay. But I think in some fashion that was one conversation that came up. And then also maybe they look at getting a consultant to go around the campus and see where are the vulnerabilities in the different school buildings and what they can do with still trying to keep it as an open campus.
Because right now, people can just walk in?
The high school, yeah. You can get into the administrative office. You walk in from the parking lot through the lobby and then to the offices. They've got a more secure system at the middle school and the elementary school that they enacted this year with the new badge system and the new background check and the visitor badge and all that. But the high school, I think they're still trying to keep a nice open atmosphere and not make it feel intimidating. But, you know, at some point things can change quickly,
absolutely,
unfortunately.
And then, of course, your team also had stories about the city of Aspen, as we know, for the last couple of weeks has instituted for the first time a new procedure for a specific citizen going into government buildings, but also opening that conversation more broadly. All of our government buildings, it's pretty easy to walk right in. We have a new police building being built, and they are taking some of these precautions. So what might we see as citizens as we walk into government buildings going forward?
You know, I think they're reviewing all that. I think their main concern is the system that they have in place now, that they're actually, it's working correctly. You know, the cameras are working right. Are we going to look at new door locks? Are we going to look at a new visitor check-in system? But there again, you know, it's part of that mountain lifestyle is trying to keep things as open and friendly, as welcoming as possible. You know, you go into Denver City and County building to pay a parking ticket and you go through a metal detector.
Wow.
You know, before you go into any government office building there, That's a for, you know, just to pay a parking ticket. So,
right.
You're just not going to get that in the community, you know, the mountain lifestyle community. That's what we want to be up here.
Mm-hmm. I don't know all my tactical terms that well, but there's even something where maybe the council, the table that the council sits behind could become a protective shield against bullets.
That's right. If they had an active shooter, then that would be a gathering place for people inside the building to hide behind. So,
and I'm not disagreeing at all with our measures to make things more secure here, but I just can't help thinking, hearing us talk about this, thinking about other things, you know, we're just like a doctor treating the symptoms, you know, without the root cause. I mean, when is it just going to reach a point where we're just in our own little protected bubbles to move freely, you know, move around in life, and still nobody is going to actually get at the root cause,
right.
And changing legislation and campaign donations,
right.
And a very ingrained culture.
Yeah, because part of what came out of the meeting yesterday was that, you know, Superintendent Malloy, there isn't a sense that they want to arm teachers here. That's just not something they want to do here, despite what the administration is proposing or thinking about and other conversations that, you know, that's been a conversation for a few years. I had a buddy of mine who's a teacher down in Denver who posted on Facebook, somebody had asked him about being armed. And he said, I think teachers should figure out how to use a copy machine first with the staple function before we start talking about arming teachers.
What about, did Jason go into the school? Do you know if the students are getting something together? Like we said, the young people are kind of taking the lead on it this time. What are Aspen and Basalt High School students, are they reacting at all?
I know that there is a movement afoot to have be part of the protest either in March or April at the high school. There are a couple kids putting something together with that.
All right, let's turn now to a decision that the city council made this week. It'll be finalized Monday or Tuesday, but Aspen City staff did make a recommendation for a new locally serving restaurant in the Wheeler Opera House space. That means goodbye to Justice Snow's and hello to this new restaurant. And what's still uncertain is the lease terms. One thing that Kylie from Justice Snow's said a lot was, well, we have this mandate to be locally serving. So when you're selling things so cheap, how do you also pay rent? That mandate has been removed. That language of that mandate has been removed, especially at the price point. So I'm kind of wondering, how much can the new restaurateurs stretch that to show? How are they going to prove that it's locally serving?
You know, maybe it won't even matter that much because Justice Snow's was above my budget. You know, I mean, for entrees for dinner there were in the mid-20s to 30s. So aside from the, you know, the secret $12 burger or whatever, you know, maybe the lack of a mandate, we're really not going to see anything that different.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting with the new space in the Wheeler and then also what's going on over at Little Annie's and the Oyster Bar that's going to come in there because that's also part of that. You know, it needs to be locally right. served, right?
Yeah.
So that's such a broad term. You know, what is locally served? Is that we want to put down $12 for a burger and a beer and that's it? Or what's our price point, right?
Right.
So I think, to your point, I think that's interesting, that component. But it'll be, you know, it's just such a good space. It's so highly visible.
It's beautiful, absolutely. In Little Annie's case, we actually lost housing to keep that restaurant. So
that's right.
I would say locally serving better at least equal what a house would have been, you know,
right.
like what
right.
having another coworker would have been. And actually that, so I don't know if that new restaurant will come any sooner than June, which is when they're trying to be up and running by Food and Wine, but we'll lose Justice Snow's sooner than we had thought.
Yes, we found out today once the agenda came out that the city will look at ending that lease with Justice Snow's on Wednesday. They are behind on rent, and so city wants to go ahead and terminate that lease now. There'll be some trade-off with getting the back rent accounted for, but it looks like Wednesday will be the last day for Justice Snow's. I don't think that'll move the timeline up for the new place.
Sure.
You know, maybe
they'll just give more time to dial it in.
Right, right. Because it was going to be 6 weeks, you know, 6 weeks later, mid-April, when the original lease was supposed to end. And so now it'll be over on the 28th.
I'm Allison Bektesh. You are listening to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's Pledge Drive. We want to say your name on the air. Call us 920-9000. This is your chance. You have Cindy and David stuck in the studio with me for another 10 to 15 minutes. And so if you want to grill them about anything or show your appreciation for them taking their times out of their day, I know they have papers and prints and blogs to get out as well. Call us 920-9000. Consider becoming an Evergreen member. That's $10 a month. Kind of a subscription to make sure Valley Roundup is on, live, and local every single week. 920-9000, and thank you. Cindy, the new edition of Aspen Sojourner has hit our table here at Aspen Public Radio. It's beautiful. It's got a great great photo on the front about spring skiing. And then right in the middle there is that flip side. And you've pitched it as that. What happens when the fun stops? You have this whole feature on the Aspen Hope Center.
Right.
Can you first just kind of give us the synopsis of what you can find in the pages?
Sure. We highlight the Aspen Hope Center. We also highlight at the end of it a couple of other mental health organizations, resources. But I had met last spring with Michelle Muthing from the Hope Center, and she wanted to, you know, see if we were interested in writing about it. And, you know, we have so many nonprofits here. They all do such great work. I can't do an article on all of them. I was, you know, very prepared to say to her, you know, hey, let's wait until there's some kind of nonprofit roundup or something right. We could do a piece on. And then as we spoke, I was really interested in hearing more about what they do. And, you know, it's not just a crisis hotline. They treat people who could be suicidal, could be people who are just going through a temporary dark glitch in life and, you know, just need some support in some way or other. And I thought the interesting thing, too, is they provide long-term things beyond the initial call in terms of counseling and follow-up visits. So I wanted to find a few people who had used the Hope Center, that the Hope Center had really made a difference for them, and see if they would be willing to share their story with us, because that is a side of Aspen that is here. Many of us have experienced those dark times at, you know, one time or another. And it's something that, especially in a resort town, above the usual stigma of talking about mental health issues and having some rough times, you know, I think it's exacerbated here just by the nature of where we live.
And you point out that a lot of us could probably use a conversation like that, and we don't think what we're going through applies. You say in your editor's letter, more of us should reach out than we do.
Yeah, or people just are afraid to reach out or uncomfortable reaching out or feel like they don't have the time to reach out if you're juggling three jobs and, you know, you're just barely making a go of it. But we all at the magazine felt like it was a really valuable piece to go into.
It was so powerful to have both the stories of a lot of the people who have used that service and the beautiful photos by Carl Wolfgang
right.
that showing their face. How did you find people who were brave enough to say, yep, I want my name and my photo in print that I sought out help?
I went through Michelle as the initial contact and asked her if she could come up with someone. And then it did get a little more difficult as the piece became due. And we, at that point, I think we had two females, and I thought, well, we really need to get a male into the mix here, too, because I don't want this to seem like it's only a women's issue.
Right.
You know, it's and ideally of, you know, a couple different age groups. And so then our writer actually reached out on Facebook and found a very willing participant who the Hope Center had made a huge impact for the better on his life. So I was relieved and happy that that all came together. It was a little touch and go at the end there.
Certainly. And talk about that range of, you kind of touched on this a moment ago, but the range of reasons why someone reached out. I mean, you don't have to be literally about to commit suicide or getting to that place yet. The stories you told show that there's a lot of reasons why sometimes we just need support.
Exactly. Yeah. And it can just be something that's, you know, as I said, a rough patch in your life and you feel like, you need support. I think another thing here is so many of us are from elsewhere, and we don't necessarily have those networks of family built in to lift us up or help us out. So that's another reason in a resort town why I think something like this is takes on even greater meaning than it might somewhere else.
Yeah. And David, I'm sure you've covered mental health issues too. I think we always do have that conversation of why here. We know that the suicide rates are so high here in Pickens County. We know Colorado in general, that feeling that maybe we're supposed to be feeling something we're not when we're looking at Aspen Mountain, which is, you know, right, just floors you with beauty, or that we're supposed to be rich and we're not, or all those things.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you make, though, that, you know, that connection. We don't have as many family people, or we don't have those close friends. You know, it takes a while to do that. And so many people here are coming and going. It's hard to make those connections. I've noticed that in the year that I've been here, for sure, that, you know, people have a hard time making a group of friends sometimes, right, until they're here a little bit older, or once you start having children, and then, you know.
And then you make those friends, and a lot of them move away.
That's right. That's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
In such a stretched out valley, I mean, I hate to bring everything back to housing and just be the girl who only talks about housing, but if you don't know your neighbors, or, you know, if you love your group of friends, but you live so far away from them, then why would you spend your free time then instead of walking the dog
and
getting to practice and all those things? What's been the reaction?
The issue has only been out a little over a week, so I think people are still seeing it. But so far, I've gotten some really nice emails from people who wrote how moved they are by reading the piece. I think the Hope Center is happy with it.
Yeah.
And my goal is, if it can help even one or two people just have an easier conversation or reach out when needed. And I know that was also the reason why the people who shared their stories with us were willing to do so. They all mentioned wanting to have an impact on somebody else potentially.
That's what it seems like, that the bravery of hearing that you're not alone, that someone else has shared their story. Maybe, I mean, you might have to do a follow-up issue really soon once people see that that's gone out, you know, that they have a story too, or it's not a male comes and says, oh, men seek help too? Maybe it's my turn to share my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I hope so.
Then, of course, I will end on that spring skiing issue, the fun on front of that, on front of the issue. You guys have some tips and secret places to go. You have an entire time chart for when the sun will make the best slush throughout
the
spring.
Exactly. We tell you how to, even little things like how to use a bowl strap when you're hiking the bowl, or what, you know, we curated a playlist for riding up the gondola that has spring themed songs on it. So that was a really fun feature to put together.
Is it going to be spring skiing when we think it is? Like, are we there now? I feel like since we got no
I hope not. I hope we have winter for another couple of months, and then spring skiing just shows up like April 1st.
Yeah.
I would love March to be the snowiest month, as it should be.
Yes. Right. Yes, that would be awesome.
As it is and as it should be, right?
That's what
but
we
you can
love.
Still go out and, you know, drink on the decks, we recommend, and we tell you what to order. And
yeah, the whole crowd. Well, let's circle it all the way back to Olympics then. Have you guys been watching, and especially any notes about any of our local Olympians now that closing ceremonies happen this weekend?
You know, I watched quite a bit of it, especially, you know, our locals. Incredible. As Madeline said, it's, you know, Torin had a great first run until that last hit, and then just kind of fell backseat a little bit. We've had a couple of people from our sister papers who have been over there and able to help us. And then Austin, our sports editor, has been doing a great job setting it up, because he's known those guys for a while now. And to see Alex pull something off like that with that nice fresh haircut that he got, it's almost like he predicted it. So, and, you know, and to see David Weiss, I mean, you know, people up here love him and his attitude. And even Aaron Blanc, who's, you know, from Crested Butte, but spends more time over here hanging out with Torin and Alex than I think he does in the Butte. So, you know, just to see all that come together is a lot of fun, especially the Alpine stuff is always intense.
I am such an Olympics junkie, and I love the Olympics, and I can't wait for them to end so I can go to bed at a reasonable hour again, too. But I've loved watching them. And the other thing that's really resonated this year is, after having seen the World Cup finals here last year, you know, and just being really familiar with all those Alpine racers now, I think that makes it me feel even a little more connected.
Absolutely. And it's so classic for Alex to be bringing silver home to our silver mining town. I think that is just fine. Perfectly respectable. Well, thank you both so much for being part of Valley Roundup today. You've been listening live to David Krause, the editor of the Aspen Times, and Cindy Hirschfeld, the editor-in-chief of Aspen Sojourner magazine, joining me here in the studio. Earlier, we heard from Madeline Osberger and Pyong Chang. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. We are in our Many Voices One Valley Winter Pledge Drive. Please call and show your support, 920-9000. Thank you both for being here with me.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you.
And thanks to the listener.